today.
This conference will.
Thank you, Lydia. Okay, our book that we're going to discuss today and next week is something that's, and then we're going to, I think Terry Petrovic scheduled to be on our call to do social networking, and that's coming up in a couple weeks. And you guys will be just so blessed by what he has to say. He's just, he's done it all. He's got a great website. He's just doing a lot of great stuff out there, so you'll love that. But today and next week, what I'd like to do is focus on a new book that I've read, and it came out of Manifest. And, of course, you're going to go, uh-oh, here's another John Maxwell, and you are so right. It is another it's his brand-new book that he sold it at Manifest, and, of course, I sent Lydia out to get it for us and add to our library of books. And the name of his book was Put Your Dream to the Test by John Maxwell. And, well, you know, he kicks off the book by just saying, laying it out as it is. He says, you know, most people fail to realize their potential because their dream becomes hypothetical. And what does he mean by hypothetical? If only, what if this is possible? You get it? It's out there. It's that never land. But it's hypothetical. It's like what you dreamed you really wanted in life. Maybe when you were a little girl or a little boy and you had this concept of what your life would look like, and it's still hypothetical for you. Well, that's what John's talking about. He's talking about taking this hypothetical that so many of us have allowed to become hypotheticals and making that dream true, building it into something that's achievable by you. And that's what his book is about. It really focuses on how do I take you from where you are stuck to a point where you really truly believe and put yourself in a position where that dream will come true for you. And that's his goal with the book. And I think he's done a masterful job because he tackles so many issues. In fact, each one of the issues that he kind of tackles, I could write a whole book about in and of itself because there's so many things that can get in our way and things that hold us back. But I think he does a great job of, you know, overview of all these areas. And then he has helpful, you know, suggestions at the end of each chapter as well as a dream test, which I've given you. We copied it and put it at the last page of the outline, so you have his dream test. And I was kind of hoping some of you might even take it and read through it and answer it before we got on the call this morning. But I know I didn't give you that instruction. So do take the time to do that over the next 24 hours so that you can really kind of examine yourself and see where your strengths, where your weaknesses are, where you have belief system issues. And that'll help you to, you know, uncover some of those things that are keeping you stuck. So the introduction of the book, it just, first of all, it talks about just whether people have dreams and what holds people back from having dreams, and because a lot of people don't even have a dream today. We all had a dream at one time. There's not a person on the face of the earth that didn't have dreams at some point in their life. You know, and some of us can go back and look at our childhood and look at what we dreamt about back then, and that's, you know, and some of those dreams were the greatness of who we were going to be and what we committed to, you know, working out in our lives and what we wanted to achieve in our lives. And those are the dreams that we want to bring back up. We want to re-examine what those are. And then the next question is, do you know how to achieve it? And a lot of people say, well, you know, I have a dream, but I don't know what step to take next. And that's great because, you know, if you have a dream, that's step one. Step two is, like, how do I achieve it? And we'll work on that through the next couple of weeks of going over the book. Then you can see how he tackles ways to approach, you know, dream building and dream achieving. He in studying people for over 40 years, he started looking at, you know, people who had big dreams who are high-profile people. And, of course, John Maxwell himself has achieved a number of dreams in his life. And he looked at many of the things that people pursue and call dreams in their lives, which don't necessarily end up in positive results. Daydreams, that's something. And he defines those as distractions from your current work. And we do have daydreams in our lives. I'm sure a lot of us do. Pie-in-the-sky dreams, and that's wild ideas with no strategy or basis in reality. Bad dreams, and that's worries about that breed fear and paralysis. And by the way, my pastor gave a great sermon this Sunday about how we worry about the future because we just keep thinking we're in control. And faith is at the core of us getting rid of that anxiety, but some of us don't recognize that. We just don't really trust God's in control. And if you don't trust that, then you're going to have problems. And I know not all of us are Christians on the call, but we all have a spiritual side to us to know there's something greater than us on earth, and we're not in control. idealistic dreams, the way the world would be if you were in charge. That's great. We know what would happen with the Boston Tea Party people. They, so the way the world would be if each one of us might be in charge. Vicarious dreams, dreams lived through others. That's where we're actually stepping into other people's lives. We vicariously live through some other person. Romantic dreams, belief that some person will make you happy. Wow. That was the core of the problems I saw in my brother and sister-in-law's marriage, that there was always this reliance upon my brother to make her happy, and no person's going to make you happy. Your happiness has got to come from within. Career dreams, belief that career success will make you happy, and that's never true either. I was highly successful in my legal career, but I wasn't fulfilled, and I believe personal fulfillment is where you're going to have your greatest level of happiness. Destination dreams, belief that a position, title, or award will make you happy. That's not true either. There's a lot of emptiness in all of that. Material dreams, belief that wealth or possessions will make you happy, and that clearly is not true. Some of the most unhappy people in the world have all the money in the world, and there's no happiness in money. So those are just invalid dreams that people have, that we have to recognize that perhaps if we're hanging on to some of these, that we're rest assured we're putting our emphasis in the wrong direction. So what we need to do is we have to look at what we have in mind. And John Maxwell gives a great definition of a dream. I liked it, so I put it into the outline today. And he calls a dream is an inspiring picture of the future that energizes your mind, will, and emotions, empowering you to do everything you can to achieve it. Wow, is that powerful. Just a powerful statement. Just, you know, circle around that on your outline and just keep that in mind to look at what your dream is and see if that'll also help you to determine whether you really have a dream or not. Because if you don't have a thought process, or you don't have a concept or a vision of the future that energizes your mind and will and emotions and empowering you to do everything you can to achieve it, in fact, you're not driven or motivated by it, then I'm going to suggest it's not your dream. And some people say, well, you know, why do we need a dream? And you know, I think John is right. I think John is correct in saying that dreams are invaluable commodities. They propel us forward. They give us energy. They make us enthusiastic. Everyone should have a dream. It's that picture that's bigger than us, the vision that's greater than us, that's creating something greater than us, that when we leave this earth, we will have accomplished something that internally fulfills us at such a level that we feel that we have lived. And that's the beauty of the concept of that dream, is to have something that really fulfills us, fulfills every aspect of our life. So you want to make sure that you have a dream. And why is it that people don't identify their dreams or can't come up with it? And he says there are five most common reasons why people have a hard time identifying their dream. One is that you get discouraged from others around you from dreaming. So in other words, people around you try to put you down or restrict you from, you know, getting pie in the sky or thinking about things that aren't real or looking at your future. And that happens a lot. We have a lot of people in our lives that'll do that. In fact, there's a cute story I heard about when I was in a self-development class about crabs. When you put a bunch of crabs in a jar, you know, sand crabs in a jar, and there'll always be one or two that, you know, that'll try to climb out of the jar. And what's fascinating is the other crabs will pinch on the one that's trying to get out and bring them back down to their level. And that's very true about us as human beings. We work it the same way. When we see somebody else with a big dream and big goals and somebody that want, you know, has a direction in their life about achieving something, what's in human nature is we get into comparative and competitive. So we get stuck in that realm. We don't want somebody else to succeed when we're not succeeding or at a much greater level. But more importantly to most human beings is the fact that we have a fear, because we live with so many fears. I mean, I keep working on that aspect in people's lives as well as my own, just to be rid of all fear. But we have a fear that somehow a person gets successful and all of a sudden we're going to lose them. And they'll no longer be in our sphere of influence. They'll no longer be a friend. They'll climb up the social ladder, or they'll climb up the political ladder, or they'll climb up, and soon they'll be out of our lives. And we're not willing to make that sacrifice, even though it could be a sacrifice for the greatness of humankind, because of the contribution they can make at a higher level, we somehow are selfish and don't want to make that sacrifice. So we're the crabs that are pulling back down the person that's trying to exceed. And that happens. So the analysis he put in the book around this, he said researchers replaced monkeys one by one with new ones. And they put the newcomer, first of all, they start out with putting all these monkeys in a room with a bunch of bananas on the top of a pole. And when he did this, he put the hungry monkeys, start off with the beginning premise. You have a room, closed off room with a bunch of monkeys, a pole and bananas at the top. Now, every single monkey has the capacity to climb that pole. And what he did was he put the monkeys in there and he put a bunch of bananas at the top of the pole. And the hungry monkey, the hungriest monkey would climb up to the top of the pole to get to the bananas. But just as he about was reach out to grab a banana, he was doused with a torrent of cold water. Squealing, he scampered back down the pole and abandoned his attempt to feed himself. Well, each monkey made a similar attempt, and each one was drenched with cold water. And after making several attempts, they finally, as a group, gave up. The researchers then removed one monkey at a time. So they took one of the monkeys out, leaving all the rest in there, and put a new monkey in there. Well, the new monkey came in, and of course, his first goal was to climb the pole and to get at the bananas. And he never had to douse the monkey with water again, because what happened is every time the new monkey started climbing the pole, all the other monkeys grabbed at him and pulled him back down again. So notice what this says to us about human nature, too. I mean, this is monkey nature, but I'm going to try it to human nature, that when we get doused with cold water and something happens in our lives and we see somebody else try to achieve it, we douse them with water. And when do we see this happening in network marketing? Oh, my gosh. How many people go, they get so excited about the opportunity they have, and then they call their relatives and somebody talks about network marketing and starts going, oh, I tried that. It's a big joke. It's a pyramid scheme. It doesn't work, does it? Right? I never made a dime. I spent lots of money and da 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 da. How incredible is that? There's the dousing of the cold water. The dousing of the cold water on one person, and what do? Is they discourage everyone else from trying to do it, achieve their dreams. So, we see that happen, that happens to be not just monkey nature, but human nature. So that's one of the ways that people have a hard time identifying their dreams, is because they get discouragement from others around them. But we need to recognize it as their stuff, not our stuff. Number two, people are hindered by past disappointments and hurts, and that can happen to us. But here's a definition of disappointment he gave in the book. He said, disappointment is the gap that exists between expectation and reality. Wow. Disappointment is the gap that exists between expectation and reality. And that is so true. In fact, I tell people all the time, and I teach and train, the concept of frustration. All of our frustrations come from our expectations. So we create our own frustrations. We create it around our children because we have an expectation of their behavior and they don't fulfill it, so we get frustrated with them because of expectations that we have. And the difference between expectations and reality, and that's what creates our disappointment. So in the past, we've had disappointments, right? And disappointments can be highly damaging to some people. Mark Twain wrote, we should be careful to get out of an experience only the wisdom that is in it and stop there, lest we be like the cat that sits down on a hot stove lid. She will never sit down on a hot stove lid again, and that is well, but also she will never sit down on a cold one anymore. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? The analogy there is so terrific. Same thing. We can draw that analogy with network marketing, right? If we take the wrong result out of a disappointment, if we take the wrong conclusion out of a disappointment, if we don't just draw from the wisdom of it instead of making it a fact, okay, we could have tremendous results. But again, we get hindered by past disappointments, and all of a sudden we create a box in which we try to fit ourselves, and then we draw a line a little harder on that box line so we don't try to bust out of that box, and we stay in the quote-unquote comfort zone for that reason. Number three, habit of settling for average. And this is a big one. Dreams require a person to stretch and go far beyond average. You can't reach for a dream and remain safely mediocre at the same time. You've got to either choose to dream or choose to be mediocre. And you know what? The word that I'm using is exactly correct. It's purely a choice. C-H-O-I-C-E. Your choice. The truth is mediocrity is always a personal choice. It's a mediocrity is a personal problem. You see, and here this came out of a Thomas Daley Foundation. It's a guy who is the CEO of a major corporation. He wrote, "You see, mediocrity is first a personal trait, a personal concession to less than our best, an individual lethargic resignation that says, I guess good enough is good enough. But soon, mediocrity metastasizes throughout the entire body politic, causing the nation to be at risk. And I'll suggest we've been at that for 25, 30 years in this country, which has caused the major economic crisis we have today. But always remember, mediocrity begins with me. We become mediocrity. We become mediocre. And so but it does metastasize. So we create it around us. As much as we create it in ourselves, we create it around us. So the concept is quit settling for average. The other thing that came up in my life was the concept of when I went to a self-development seminar, and some of you have been to some of the Clemmer work, but it was really cute. One of the first things they kick off in the Champions Workshop is they ask people in the audience, they go, well, the dogs like bones. And, of course, everybody goes, well, yeah, dogs like bones. And the facilitator says, well, I'm going to suggest to you that they don't like bones. They settle for bones. Because if you truly put a tray of steak out, a bowl of steak and a bowl of bones, which one do you think the dog will go after? And everybody starts laughing because clearly the dog's going to go after the steak, right? That's what they're going to go after. They're not going to go after the bones. They're going to go after the steak. So what happens is they settle for bones because we as owners don't give them the steak. We eat the steak and we throw the bones to the dogs. And you can all feel very blessed that dogs don't do the cooking because you would end up with the bones, right? So it's a concept of settling. So what are we settling for in our lives? What are we settling for in our lives? And that's the thing we need to look at is are we settling for things in our lives? Instead of choosing other than mediocrity, we're turning to choose mediocrity or choose average. Number four, some people lack the confidence they need to pursue their dreams. And that's very true. Some people go, I just don't have the belief. I heard that this weekend in my pathway class. You know, some people said, I just don't believe. I just have a lack of belief that I'm going to achieve that dream in my life, that I'm going to achieve presidential director status in my life. I have a lack of belief. And dreams are fragile, you know. They will allow you to, you know, let your mind control them because they are fragile. So it's necessary for us to build a great level of confidence around achieving that dream. But how do we gain confidence? How do we gain confidence? And one of the main ways we gain confidence, well, by little successes. So I always tell people, don't put your eyes on the presidential. Put your eyes on, you know, I told one person, I said, all I want you to do in the business period five, I want you to sign up one person. Can you sign up one person? Isn't that a great concept? Is to just, you know, take a little bite-sized thing. They haven't signed up anyone in a couple months, so I said, just sign up one person. Focus on small things. Achieve small successes in life, and that helps build confidence. But another one, there's a management consultant out there. Her name is Judith Bardwick, and she affirms in her book, she says, real confidence comes from knowing and accepting yourself, your strengths and your limitations. In contrast to depending on the affirmation of others from the outside. Great concept here, people, to get. So many times we seek outwardly for affirmations for our worth and our net being and everything else. And I even, you know, am guilty of that myself because I always want to try to be the best. So every time I do something, even yesterday I got to get on, at church, I got to get up in front and give an announcement about an upcoming women's spring brunch, and I was so excited about it. And I get off stage, and I go, well, Lydia, how did I do? And it's so stupid. Why do I need confirmation from Lydia on how I did on stage announcing a women's spring brunch? But you see, we get caught up in concepts of validation from others. Instead of the confidence that we have really comes from knowing and accepting ourselves, our strengths and our limitations ourselves. And I'll giggle and laugh and tell you guys how cute that was, because here I'm asking Lydia how I did it, and I went up and I was, you know, socializing with some people after church, and this one woman in our church came up and she goes, "You know, Mary Jo, I just want to tell you, you're missing your calling." And I said, "What's that?" She goes, "You should be the next Beth Moore." And it was so cute. It's so precious. Here I'm worried about how I give announcement at church around a spring brunch, and somebody comes up and tells me I should be the next Beth Moore. I mean, it was just hilarious. So I just start laughing at myself, how silly I am to worry about those things. But we do. We tend to look outside, and we need to stop looking outside for affirmations. People, affirmations are nice, but the concept of having confidence really comes from us knowing and accepting ourselves, knowing our strengths, knowing our weaknesses, and accepting ourselves. When we keep looking at ourselves and saying we're inadequate, that's not accepting ourselves. That's lying to ourselves, you know. So we got to start, you know, really getting that self-confidence so that we can set our dreams and pursue our dreams. And finally, the fifth one is lack of imagination to dream. You know, there's some people that are just really, they don't have the imagination. And I'm going to suggest that if you're understanding personality quadrants, the quadrant that I think falls in this category the most is going to be what we call the analyst quadrant, because they have this fear of never being wrong. So dreams are really hard for analysts to have. They're very difficult. And I'm not saying that there aren't analysts out there that don't dream, so don't read me wrong. I'm just trying to help you understand perhaps one of the reasons why, if you're in that quadrant, why you have a harder time dreaming than other people. The big dreamers are the promoters. They can dream every day. They'll have a new dream every day. They have a problem, though, around clarity around dreams, because they sometimes live in dreamland. Supporters tend to have dreams, but their dreams are more about other people creating great results. And controllers always have big dreams. They're very result-oriented as well. So imagination is important for us, because imagination is the soil that brings a dream to life. And Max Lucado wrote something, you're probably familiar with that author, and a friend of John Maxwell's. Anyway, he said, "You're not an accident. You weren't mass-produced. You aren't an assembly line product. You were deliberately planned, specifically gifted, and lovingly positioned on the earth by a master craftsman." And he really believes, if you believe that you are not an accident, that you weren't mass-produced, that you aren't an assembly line product, you are clearly a unique human being with unique gifts and abilities. Now it's time to take that to another level. But you got to get that belief. You have to have that belief in yourself, and then take that and start imagining what is it that you're here to create. What is your vision for yourself? I spent some time on that because I think some of you are stuck in some of those different areas. Did anyone have a response? Did any of you feel like one of these five fit you, why you don't dream or why you're having a hard time tackling a dream? Anyone want to share?
Mary Jo, this is Shirlene. It wasn't in answer to that, but I wanted to make a statement when you were talking about Beth Moore and how you would like to be here one day. Well, I think she is the top of the top, but when I get on here, I'm not in your downline, but you are my Beth Moore in filming me as an associate.
Thank you, sweetie. Thanks, Shirlene. Thanks. All right, Anyone have a comment about the five that maybe one of them really, or maybe you don't want to share. I mean, you don't have to share. This is something that's personal to you, but sharing, you become a teacher of the moment if you share.
Mary Jo.
Uh-huh.
This is Judy.
Yeah.
I definitely am in the analytical group, and I have always thought there was something wrong with me that I couldn't dream. Because my darling upline is a nurturer, and she's always working with us, you know, and teaching, trying to teach us. And I could never. I kept saying, I just can't come up with it. And so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, good. So now you don't feel like you're like a defective machine or something. Right. You're not wired wrong. You're not wired wrong, Judy. You're just in a quadrant that is going to me, as I've seen over the years, that quadrant has the hardest time with the concept of dreaming because they're. But the big holdback is the concept of that you don't want to be wrong. You know, you're just really, you really want to, and when you have that fear of not being wrong or doing something or making a mistake, you know, dreaming is asking you to just really go outside your box in a huge way, and all the fear, it just triggers tons of fear because it's all about, oh my gosh, what if I don't do it, or what if I don't have a mechanism to accomplish it, or how to, you know, you just go into, it's just massive fear, it's massive constraints. They just, all your thoughts go in a different direction, and that's what stops you. But at some point, you can just try to acknowledge that, and with the knowledge that you have around that's where you have a tendency to go, just come from a total release and just say, okay, Lord, I surrender this. I'm just surrendering all this. I'm just, lay on my heart. Give me a dream. Give me a vision. I just ask you. And I think prayerful attempts at getting there really can support you. So try that and see, because I really believe the Lord lays on your heart the visions for your life. I think he gives us the direction. It's just, you know, a lot of times we reject it, or we don't want to hear it, or we don't even necessarily see it because we don't allow our brain to go in that direction. But free that up and see what comes out for you, Judy. Okay? Great.
So much.
Great share.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, people, let's go on. I gave you a dream test. The last page of the outline today was the dream test. And the purpose of the dream test, and I know I should have put in the foreword to sending out the outline, although a lot of you don't look at it until you get on the call, but it's the 10 questions, and there's ABCs in each of them. And I really want you to go back and go and answer the questions and be very honest with yourself around every single one of those and see if you can say yes to them. In fact, you look at, I'll give you an example. The ownership question is my dream really my dream? And you answer, A, I would be the person in the world most pleased if I accomplished my dream. Can you say, yes, that's true? B, I have publicly shared my dream with other people, including those I love. Yes, you have, or no, you haven't. My dream has been challenged by others, and I still embrace it. So see if you're answering yes with an exclamation mark after each of the statements made under each of the questions. And this little test is so marvelous, because it really will highlight for you where you're weakest. Where do I need the most work to have that dream, to have that vision for my life? Where am I the weakest, and what do I need to work on? And then you can work on it, because what we're going to do is we're going to go through each chapter for each of these questions. Today we're going to start off with Chapter 1 and Chapter 2, and then next week I'm really going to try to tackle the other 8 chapters, because I don't want to spend too many weeks on this. But I do want to give you the insight, and perhaps then you can go purchase the book yourself if you feel like you want more work on it. But it's just terrific to be able to isolate for yourself what is holding you back from having that vision or dream in your life. Because it's so important for us to have it. If you believe it's important to have, which is why I spend time with the introduction as well, that there's critical importance that you come out with a dream. Otherwise, you're just, you know, kind of like living life kind of in a what I call more of a reactive life than a proactive life. Having a dream gives you a direction in which you can put your rudder in the water and aim towards a net result. Without that, you're kind of like a boat without a rudder. You might, you know, still keep active. All of us can have activities. Some of us can be very efficient in our activities. Some of us can create some results with those activities. But why is it we're not getting an end result? Well, if you don't know what the end in mind is, kind of like what Covey says, start with the end in mind, right? I mean, that's got to be what you, and that's what we call our vision or a dream for ourselves. Okay, so let's dig in. And I want to start off with the first question that's on your test, and we're going to go over that chapter in question 2 today, hopefully get through those 2 chapters. And the first question is the ownership question, which is my dream really my dream? Because what happens to a lot of us in life is that we get on board with a dream for ourselves, but it's based on what our parents told us and what our parents did. You know, your parents might have said, la-di-da-di-da. For me, it was, when I was growing up, I was such a, you know, I was always such a leader, natural-born leader, kind of, that everybody said, well, you're going to be a politician, you got to go to law school, da-da-da-da. And, of course, I kind of just thought that that's what, I mean, like, don't leaders show up in other places besides politics? Oh my gosh, today a lot of people say, I don't want to be in politics at all. You know, I mean, we got such a lot of headaches going on. But the idea is that that leaders can be many places, but that was just where people pegged me, and I allowed it to happen. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, at 5, 6, 7, and 8 when I was captain of my, you know, my local baseball team in my neighborhood, and they were all boys and I was the only girl. I mean, you know, that's the kind of stuff that consistently happened to me over and over and again all my life. So I just felt like it was pretty clear I was going to go to law school. So I went to law school, I practiced law, and I did all that stuff, which was a great, rewarding career, but I never was fulfilled. I did a career for 20-some years, and I never was fulfilled. I kept wondering, I kept living every day wondering, what's missing? What's missing? And there was huge gaps in my life. And it wasn't until I got involved with Manatech and went through what I went through and the process of doing network marketing, that I really reached my fulfillment and my direction and my vision for my life, and I feel totally on track. And so it doesn't have to be, you don't have to say to yourself, well, Mary Jo, I'm too old for this. Wrong. It doesn't matter. There is no such thing as you're too old to take on your dream instead of somebody else's dream for you. And in Cecil Osborne's book, he writes, the young child has no clear picture of himself. He sees himself only in the mirror of his parents' evaluation of himself. A child who is told repeatedly that he is bad boy or lazy or no good or stupid or shy or clumsy will tend to act out this picture which the parent or some other authority figure has given him. And that's exactly what happens to us. Whether it's good or it's bad, we tend to play that role. And that holds us back from really having our dream or being what we want to be, because we believe everything around us, we're totally naive, and we're totally, you know, our whole world is our parents. It's our whole world is the environment we're growing up in when we're a child. And it has such a huge impact on us, which is why I work so hard with parents of new kids. I just kind of go, please don't draw a box around your children. Allow them to think big. And when they come home and say, I want to be president of the United States someday, I go, great, I will support you in whatever that looks like. You know, instead of, oh, no, Billy, you know, that's kind of a little outrageous. Maybe you want to just kind of calm down, because you don't want him to be disappointed when he doesn't get there. Well, let me get a vomit bag and throw up when you say those things to a child. You want that child to have the biggest dreams in the world. Forget about disappointment. You want him to dream because you want him to dream the rest of his life. Okay? So when you own your own dream, what does it look like? What's the difference between owning your own dream and not owning your own dream? So I gave you the differences on a sheet of paper here. When you own your dream, it feels right, instead of that it will not have the right fit for you. It will provide wings to your spirit, not be a weight on your shoulders. It will fire you up, not drain your energy. It will keep you up at night instead of putting you to sleep. It will take you out of your comfort zone instead of taking you out of your strength zone. It will be fulfilling to you, not fulfilling just to others. You will feel you were made to do it. You were brought on this earth to do this very thing. Instead of requiring others to make you do it. In other words, so you choose where you fit on those things. You look at that series of lists between doing your dream or owning somebody else's dream they've given you really makes a big difference. And when I love those statements that's on page 2 of the outline, because I think it really will get a lot of you guys on track saying, wow, Mary Jo, I am stuck in somebody else's dream for me, or somebody else's impression of me. I don't have my own dream. So time to pursue it. That's why I spend time on airplanes with people. When they sit down next to me and they start talking and they go, I'm going out for a job. And I said, what do you do? And I ask them what they do. I said, do you love what you do? Are you passionate about it? And they go, no, I really, you know, I just got, but I got to make money because I got to pay the mortgage. I go, listen to you. You have to make money. You have to. I said, those are all victim words. You get the victim's language? And they look at me like, who the heck is this woman sitting next to me telling me I'm victim? Yeah. So I generate a lot of interesting conversations. But, you know, by the time I'm done, it's incredible. And I have people calling me, writing me, sending me emails every day that from different adventures I have on airplanes that are just, like, off the charts. The ones that really grab onto the concept, it's unreal what's happened in their lives. They've started pursuing their passion, and the difference in their life is night and day. I said, what is your – and then they go, they have to keep paying for their house. And I say, well, let me ask you a question. How does your house fit in your passion for your life? If it doesn't fit in the passion for your life, who cares if you have the house? Now, if you have kids and a family, you have other responsibilities, there could be a reason. But, I mean, this is a single woman I was talking to on the airplane at one time when I said, who cares if you have the house? If you really love your house, then go to your mortgage company and say, hey, I need a sabbatical for 6 months because I want to write a book. I mean, there are 100 ways of skinning a cat. We just don't get outside the box. We just get locked into thinking a fixed way instead of getting outside the box and creating the greatness of who we are. And Henry David Thoreau wrote it so well. He says, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. You know, in his time, he believed that was true, and I believe it's true today as well. And the number one reason it's true is because people don't pursue their dreams. If you leave your dream on the table, you will leave a life of quiet desperation. George Eliot says, too, and this is what I told you earlier, it's never too late to be what you might have been. Isn't that great? See, that was me. I was a lawyer. I was CEO of a company. And some of you go, oh, Myra Jo, look at all the accolades. Look at it. Well, so I'm telling you guys, none of that means anything. If you're not happy and being fulfilled, none of that means anything. So it's never too late for you to be what you might have been. Think about that. Great statement. So don't ever let it be, I might have been, but choose to be it. You still have time. How to take ownership of your dream? Be willing to bet on yourself. Lead your life instead of just accepting it. In other words, get proactive instead of reactive in your life. Take charge. Don't just sit back and let things happen to you. This is a famous Christian issue with a lot of Christians. They go, oh, well, I'm just going to, whatever the Lord brings, I'm just going to do whatever. And I'm going, yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. Just kind of sit back and let life just happen around you. See, love what you do and do what you love. Very important. That's the number one question. You can circle that one as well and tell me whether that's true for you. Don't compare yourself to others. That's scriptural as well as in every other self-development book, leadership book, success book. Comparison robs you of life. It burns your energy up. It causes depression. I'll guarantee you one thing, there will always be people better than you in any aspect of your life. Tiger Woods lost the Masters. There was somebody better than him that day. If all he did was compare himself to other people, he'd probably be a really happy camper for the most part, but let me tell you, he's such an exceptional athlete, and there's still people that perform better than he does on days. So don't compare yourself to others. Believe in your vision for your future even when others don't understand you. Don't let other people look at them as monkeys and crabs. And you're not going to let monkeys and crabs drag you down. Know your dream. Les Brown, and that's a big thing because remember, we got to work on our dream. You got to figure that out too, people. You got to have a dream. You got to dig in it. Les Brown, in his book, Live Your Dreams, and you might think about getting this if you don't know your dream. Ask yourself, what are my gifts? What 5 things I like about myself? What people make me feel special? What moment of personal triumph do I remember? Answer those questions, and that'll help guide you on a path of finding your dream. Find out what it is you want and go after it as if your life depends on it. This is also a quote from our buddy Les Brown. Find out what it is you want and go after it as if your life depends on it. Why? Because your life does depend on it. What a great statement. That's another great quote for you to put up on your desk. All right, so that's number one. Do you own your dream? Everybody got that? You got to answer that question, and you've got to take it on. It's got to be your ownership you have, not somebody else. The next chapter is, do I really see my dream? In other words, this part of the book wasn't even written until John Maxwell came across a friend of his who was a big CEO of a publishing company, and the guy said, He shared with his mentor, you know, he had a lot of mentors in writing this book because he wanted to get a lot of insight from lots of people. And this fellow said, oh, my gosh, John, he says, I think your book is terrific. I think it's going to serve a huge purpose in life. But he said, but one thing you've got to make sure people get is they need clarity. Clarity. Wow. And a lot of us have issues around clarity. But we need clarity in our life. Because if you do not have clarity, you have nothing. Wow. That's a huge statement. Ooh. you don't have clarity. Now, I'm not going to go that far that you don't have anything, but you're not going to have direction if you don't have clarity. Vision must come first, and then strategy. You know, what do we do in Manatech? In Manatech, what we love to do is look for different strategies and different techniques and different things and different that. And we have this. We have the YES program. We have the ICANN program. We're creating our future program. We have the four core program. We have so many strategies out there of how to build a business. It's not even funny. But the problem is, no strategy is going to work for you until you have a vision. So vision must come first. And the vision must be compelling enough to motivate you to stay the course. And when you look at your vision, you have to see how clear it is. That's why when I have people draft goals in Manatech, when I do the pathway class and I have new business builders draft their goals for me, I always tell them it has to be SMART. Not SMART from an intelligent perspective, but SMART as an acronym for specific, measurable, attainable, risky, and timely. Every goal you set has to be specific, measurable, attainable, risky, and timely. Specific and measurable. Get it? They have to be clear. You need clarity. You have to have a real vision out there. Otherwise, I know it's not going to motivate you. It's not going to get you going. When people tell me their spiritual goal is I want to impact lives around the world. Oh, great. How is that motivating you? What is it? So I always ask, when you get a generic vision for yourself, I want you to say, what does it look like? Keep asking the question, and what does that look like? And what does that look like? And what does that look like? When you ask that question over and over and over, and what will I need to do in order to create that to happen? You're going to get into specific actions, specific activities, specific, and then you make the specifics your goal. Get very specific with the vision for your life. And you want to make sure it's razor sharp. And if it's not razor sharp, that's why you lose people in Manatech. You get them on board, they start doing the business, and they're gone in 6 months. Why? Because they don't have a vision for their life. I'm working with a couple of people now, and I can't wait. We're going to meet this week or next, and it's all about that. They came out like rocket fire. They've run one, two, or three trips to Costa Rica on their downline for their family members. And they're just on fire. But you know what? That fire is going to die if I don't get in their face. Because I know that they're doing it because Costa Rica. Their vision was Costa Rica. I have to help build the bigger vision for them. Because otherwise, it's done. I don't want people to be hot and then cold. I want people to see a bigger vision in their life of what they can do with this. If you can do this just to get to Costa Rica, what can you do to create, you know, to be able to fund 20 missionaries the rest of your life? So you're telling me that Costa Rica is more important than doing God's work in the mission field? Whoa, boy, am I getting tough with people now. Yeah. But see, that's the kind of conversation we need to have with some of these people that are just gung-ho about Costa Rica. You can get gung-ho about winning an all-expenses-paid trip, but what about gung-ho about creating a new tomorrow for this world, which we desperately need? If it's just not clear to you that we desperately need leaders, we need leaders in the business world. We need people that don't operate out of greed every step of the way. We need people that are real human beings that get it, that feel for every human being on this earth. We need leaders across the board. We're desperate. But you want to win Costa Rica. Okay, I got it. But to get it, we want a crystal clear vision. So that's why we need to get people to think of their crystal clear vision. Can you help somebody else develop a crystal clear vision if you don't have one for your life? I will suggest not. It's that same old statement. You can't get other people to do things that you're not willing to do. So until you develop a crystal clear vision for your life, don't even attempt to help other people do it. I have some people that say, well, I don't set goals, Mary Jo, because, you know, they don't work for me. I go, great, so you want to fail. And they could be very successful, but you know what? They're successful and then they fail. They might be temporarily successful because other people do it for them, but then they fail. Because if you can't build a vision for yourself, you're not going to be able to build a vision for somebody else. And this work in network marketing is all about vision. But let me suggest something to you. It's not just network marketing. Everything you do in life is about vision. Do you have a clear vision for your children? And that doesn't mean you dictate what they become. It means you have a vision for them that allows them the freedom and creativity. You build a vision about building on their strengths, fulfilling the greatness that they are as a unique human being, allowing them the freedom of choice of, you know, direction in terms of the path they're going to take. You have a vision for them being successful because they are achieving the dream they have in their life. Not your dream for them, but their dream. Do you have this crystal clear vision, or is your vision for them that they become a doctor because that's what you want? Or they go off and they serve in the mission field because that's what you want for them. That may not be the calling on their life. So we need to have a clear vision of what we want to create instead of, you know, something that's indirect and something that's lack of specificity that will allow us only to flounder as a person and allow others to flounder. So as he says in his book, he says the indispensable first step to getting the things you want out of life is this: decide what you want and have clarity around it. Clarity takes a lot of effort, people. If you're on the call today and you don't have clarity around your dream or your vision for yourself, then take time. You can use quiet time. You can use helpers or mentors. You can ask yourself questions. The dream is always rooted in the dreamer. That's what you need to do. Your dream is rooted in you. It's not rooted in Mary Jo or your upline or your crossline or your husband or your kids. Your dream is rooted in you. Your experiences, your circumstances, your talents, your opportunities. So you start searching your feelings, your senses, hearing and seeing. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Start working on asking those kind of questions of yourself, and you'll come up with it. It really is helpful for you to do that. The questions that he suggests is, what am I feeling? What am I sensing? What is my intuition telling me? Listening to that intuition. What am I seeing? What is happening around me? What am I hearing? What are others saying? What am I thinking? What do my intellect and common sense say? These are all good questions: feeling, sensing, seeing, hearing, thinking, tapping into your senses. And sometimes tools can help you. So you could tap into resources to find that dream. I love books. I just read tons of books because they give me so much education on what other people have created and what they've done in their lives and who they are, the beingness they created, and that allows me to formulate who I want to be and what I want to create. You can watch movies or read quotations. Other times, having a photograph or an object in front of you can help you dream. And then dig back in your experiences and think of people. What were people in your life that totally turned you on, that really just set your life on fire? Those are the kind of things you want to do. So you can use tools, can be people and materials and books and all sorts of movies, all sorts of CDs. A clear dream affirms your purpose. A person's dream and a person's purpose are intertwined. The more clearly you see your dream, the more clearly you're able to see your purpose. A clear dream gives direction and motivation to the team. So as you have a clear dream, what are you going to do? You're going to create that for everybody around you. So that's the greatness that you have to do in Manitech, is that as you create a dream and you create a sense and you create a direction, people around you will get motivated and turned on fire because of your clarity of your dream. Lack of clarity hinders initiative, inhibits persistence, and undermines follow-through. So clearly, you want to have clarity around your dream and your purpose, and you want to be able to cast that upon the people in your organization so that they, too, can become a part of not your dream, but their dream. It will instill initiative and drive and force to not only support you in creating yours, but they will have their dream to pursue themselves. So know that, you know, we always work in forms of team. We always work in teams, no matter if it's at a church or it's in your house or your family or your Manitech business. It's always a team. And clarity of vision and purpose really creates tremendous things and results. And mission statements in families are just terrific. You as a family, I read this in Stephen Covey's book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and I believe that's the book I found it in. I know it's his work. But he talked about building a mission statement for a family. And he said he got his kids all together when they were young. And he said, what is the purpose of our family? What is our mission statement? what direction are we going in? And he had all the kids contribute to put it together. And when they were done and they fine-tuned it, they posted it on the wall in their home. And you know that those children were unbelievable kids. It wasn't that when they got in their teenage years, they might fall off track and do something, but they always went back. It wasn't about them falling off the track. It was more so about the team or the family saying, hey, John, remember our mission statement. They could all go back to something they all agreed to. They all fought for. They all looked at the purpose of their family. So it was the other children that helped bring the child back, the one that went off stray, back in alignment with the mission of the family. So it wasn't just a parenting role. It was a family role. Isn't that a beautiful thing? It just is a great idea, a great concept. I think you can do the same thing with your Manatech group. You can do the same thing with your team of people you have in your Manatech business. Build a mission statement for your team and then abide by that mission statement. It's great. Okay, people, so those are the first two questions that we do, and we're going to go through the other eight next week. And I just ask you to really tackle this issue. I think it's huge. I think it's huge for all of us. I think it gives us, it gives us a basic premise. We can work, but I really, if you don't have a dream and you don't have a vision, I want you to quit working at Manatech, and I want you to find that vision and dream. Because I really believe that you can work at Manatech, and some of you have been working at Manatech for 10 years, and you still haven't gotten where you want to go. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to start with a lack of purpose or vision and clarity, perfect clarity around that vision and that purpose. Critical that we have that, because it's the core of giving us motivation and persistence to continue the course. So, okay, so work on that. Do the dream test yourself, and then next week we'll talk about the other eight questions and go through all those other chapters. So we'll get through with the book. All right. Any comments, questions, anything? I think we went over a little bit today, but not bad. Anyone? Okay, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll be back to put your dream to the test next week as well. And then we'll get Terry Petrovic on here, hopefully the week after. I will double-check with Terry and make sure he's ready to go. And we love you. Have a great week.
Love you. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.